And the first man that his mom, her name is Kelly, and the first man that she married was a guy named Ward. And it was while she was married to Ward that she started using cocaine. So Ward ended up passing away when Kevin was only about 5 years old. And his mom fell in love with another man whose name was also Kevin. And that guy had a 9-year-old stepdaughter. So when Kevin was 5, he moved in with his new stepdad, and that was his new family. And his mom and stepdad, they were always breaking up and getting back together. And they were always on and off drugs. It was constant fighting in the home, a lot of instability, and it was very hard on Kevin growing up. It was very hard on him and his stepsister. At one point, when his mom and stepdad were separated, they were living with one of Kelly's friends. This was when Kevin was in about first grade. And he remembers there being parties at his house every weekend, you know, with drugs and alcohol. And the kids weren't allowed to go in the basement. He always wanted to know, you know, what is happening down there? Why can't I go and see what they're doing? So one night he just decided, I'm gonna go down anyway. So he walked down the steps, and what he remembers seeing was people smoking weed. And he actually, from first grade, he remembers seeing people snorting lines of coke off of a mirror on the pool table. So yeah, then when he was in third grade, his mom and stepdad, they were back together at this time. And he walked into his house one day after school, and he found his mom sleeping with another man in his stepdad's home. And that guy, his name was Tony. They ended up moving in with Tony for a while. He lived with him, and his mom's drug problem just kept getting worse and worse. And one night, it was like 3 in the morning, and his mom woke him up in a panic. And she said that they needed to go get parts for her car. So he gets in the car, and they drove down to a really rough part of the city. And she bought drugs at night, in the middle of the night, on a school night for him. So his dad, his natural father, his biological father, found out everything that was going on, and just, you know, this life that he had been living. He didn't really have any relationship with him up until that point, and he found out all the stuff that was going on, and he decided, you know, I have to do something for this kid. So he took him in, and when Kevin was in fourth grade, he moved in with his dad, his biological father, and his stepmom, and three girls that they had together. And it was while he was living here that he was actually severely neglected. He was kind of like the invisible child. His stepmom hated his real mom. He just had a deep hatred for her, and took it out on Kevin. And, you know, Kevin maintained a relationship with his mom and stepdad, and his mom would always, you know, manipulate his words and, you know, put him in the center of all of their problems. So things did end up getting a little better, though, with his stepdad and his mom. He got to the point, you know, he would go and visit and stay with them on the weekends. Their drug problem got a little better. He would stay with them every weekend, and his stepdad really actually started investing in his life. He started, like, coaching his, you know, his sports teams, and they really started to get close, and he actually, you know, relearned to respect this man in his life. And then one day, his stepdad woke him up in the morning and told him that his mom left with another man, and that she wasn't coming back this time. And he told him that he didn't know what to do, but that he had to take him back to his dad's. So the next day, or that night, rather, when Kevin went to sleep, he never knew if he was ever going to see his stepdad again. So, yeah, given everything that happened to Kevin, you know, the life that he lives, that he, you know, the childhood that he grew up in, we can all see, you know, where his life was headed. He was obviously, you know, very angry. He had a lot of anger towards his parents, a lot of anger towards the world, rightfully so. You know, but there's not really any telling, you know, where that anger could have led him in life. You know, maybe that would have led him to assault someone and end up in jail. You know, or maybe he would have followed his parents' examples, just of abandoning the people that are closest to them, and maybe he would have abandoned everyone in his life. Or maybe he would have just ended up as an alcoholic or a druggie that just lived a life to numb the pain that he grew up with. But yeah, I mean, I love this guy a lot, and I know you all know people like this, you know kids like this, that have had rough childhoods, rough backgrounds, We all know kids like this. We have them in our lives. They're our own nieces and nephews. They're our own friends. They're our neighbors. And we see kids on the street walking every day, and you just know sometimes, like, these kids have it rough. We obviously don't want them to end up, you know, the way that so many others do, because in all likelihood, the chances are great that they're going to end up in jail. And the chances are almost certain that they're just going to go through life burning through relationship after relationship and leaving a trail of pain behind them. Unless any of us step in and do anything, unless any adults intervene and show these kids, you know, the love that they're longing for, nothing's going to change. And this isn't just about Kevin. This isn't just about him or the one or two people that you may be thinking of, that you know, that, you know, have had a rough life and aren't headed down a good path. It's about all the people and their lives that they're going to affect. It's about, you know, the generations of hurt and pain. You know, when you look at Kevin's life and you look back, you know, his mom, she grew up worse than Kevin did. You know, she would grow up in a family of crime, you know, and actually a mafia family. And you can just see how through the generations, just the hurt and the pain is passed down. And unless anything changes, obviously, that's just going to continue to go on and on throughout the generations. So the question is, you know, is there anything that we can do? Is there anything that we can do about the pain that, you know, a kid like Kevin grows up with, about the pain that, you know, so many kids in our lives and so many kids that we know and see that they go through? Is there anything we can do to ease that pain? Is there anything we can do to, you know, help change the course that they're on and set them on the right path? And the answer is yes, there is. And the Bible actually has some great stuff to say about it. And we're going to look at a passage in Scripture that talks about just that. And I really want you guys to focus in on this. It's very important. It's a very important passage, and it's just a very important truth. Because Kevin didn't end up the way you would have expected him to. Things actually turned out really great for him. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But first, I want you guys to open up and look at this Scripture. It's in the Psalms, the book of Psalms, chapter 78, and we're going to look at the first seven verses. If you have a paper Bible, I don't know how many people use paper still, but it's like right in the middle of the Bible, and if you're like on a Bible app or something, I'm using the New International Version. So yeah, this psalm, it's written by a guy named Asaph. He was a priest and a music director at the time of the reign of King David. And that's the same David that killed the giant from a slingshot. You ever heard that story? Anyway, okay, so we're looking at verses 1 through 7. Verse 1, it says, "O my people, hear my teaching. Listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter hidden things from of old. What we have heard and known, what our fathers have told us." See, Asaph is reaching back into the past because the people, they're longing to know how to live. They're longing for some sense of truth. And he's saying that there's truth in the past that we can apply to our life today. It continues in verse 4. It says, "We will not hide from their children. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel." See, God gave instruction to these people, instruction that these people were desperate for. They needed some sort of instruction on how to live their life. They didn't want to, you know, just live life, you know, for themselves. They knew there was something more to life. They were longing for something. They had the same emptiness that a kid like Kevin feels, just in wanting instruction. So then in verse 5 it continues and it says, "Which he commanded our forefathers to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children, then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands." If you change a kid's life, you change the future. Just think about that for a second. Here it is right in front of you. "We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. We will teach our children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children, then they would put their trust in God. If you change a kid's life, you change the future. When you think about the pain that so many kids feel these days, just people in general, the suffering that humanity is faced with, you think about all the problems in the world, the social issues that we struggle with, you know, hunger and thirst and poverty, human trafficking, all these terrible things, it's often easy to feel like there's not really anything that we can do about it. No matter what we do, we can't really make any difference in the big scheme of things because we're too insignificant. And, you know, I know that I've struggled with that at times, and I'm sure many of you have, when you think about all the pain. But I want you guys to know that that's not true. That it's actually a lie from Satan. That he doesn't want us to do anything. He wants us to believe that we are incapable of causing any change so that nothing changes. Because for Satan, it's a win if even one kid is not loved. He doesn't want even one kid to feel loved. He doesn't want one kid to have the instruction to grow up knowing the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there. That's a lie. Mother Teresa actually said something about this that I think is very applicable. She said, if you can't feed 100 people, then feed just one. I think that's very powerful to think about. If you change just one person's life, if you can't change everyone's, just one. Try and change just one person's life, because actually that one person's life that you change may affect generations to come. If you invest in just one child's life, you can change the entire future. If you invest in one child's life by getting to know them, by getting to know them on their level, by building relationships with them, by becoming like them, and, you know, just becoming friends, really, you can have an impact that lasts long beyond your life and long beyond their life. Because not only do you affect them, but you affect all the relationships in their life and all the people to come after. You can have an impact that lasts generations, that lasts even outlasts this earth. You can have an eternal impact by affecting just one child's life. If you change a kid's life, you change the future. So how do we do that? Well, there's many different opportunities that we have right in front of us to get involved in children's lives. We actually have opportunities right here at Everyday Church to do that. Many of you know Wendy. She's the children's pastor here. We actually don't see her in worship very often because she's always downstairs doing just this, investing in kids' lives, teaching them about the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. She's actually devoted her entire life to that. Last year sometime, she did a princess camp where she took a bunch of girls from the church and girls invited any girls in the neighborhood to come. And she just poured into them and just told them about that they were loved by God, that they were created in God's image, and that he loved them. She just built up their self-esteem and confidence and poured into them. It was something that, you know, girls these days don't really get. In the culture that we live in, girls are often looked at as a commodity. And Wendy recognized that and said, we need to, you know, build them up. We need to pour into them and teach them the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. And I think that's one of the greatest examples I can think of this scripture. So yeah, she's serving children right here, right now at this church. About 6 months ago, we also realized that there were several teenagers, some of them are here right now, in our church, and we didn't really have any ministry that was, you know, geared specifically towards their age group, so we decided that I was gonna start a youth group. So we've been experimenting, we're still in the beginning stages, but for like the last semester, we've met every other week at my place and just looked at some stuff in the Bible and prayed for one another and got to know each other better, and it's been great. But yeah, we would love to have anyone that's interested get involved with either the children's ministry or the youth ministry. If you feel any conviction to do that, you can just come talk to me or Wendy after the service or get in touch with one of us this week. We'd love to talk with you about that. You may, you know exactly how you want to help out, or you may just want to talk it over and see if there's anything that you can do. But if you would like to do that, we would love to talk to you. There's also, you know, plenty of opportunities outside of our church in the community that you can help out in. There's some great examples of people doing those things in our church. Samantha is here today. She actually volunteers with an after-school program called Exodus, where they reach high-risk kids in our neighborhood. And she's a teacher there, and she really, you know, values that role in her children's lives and pours into them and mentors them. She takes that very seriously. And many of you may even know Esther. She's a young girl that started coming to our church about a year ago because of the relationship that Samantha built with her at Exodus. And I think that's an amazing example of just investing in a child's life. I actually, many of you know, I'm a soccer fiend. And if you don't know, you will know soon. But so I coach with Uptown Soccer Academy. And they're a nonprofit after-school program in our neighborhood that offers, you know, quality soccer training and just nutrition education and other enrichment. And it's absolutely free for the families to be involved in that. And that's been an awesome opportunity for me and outlet just to get to know kids in a place that they are, you know, on their grounds and in their world. Chris, the pastor here, he meets with a group of boys at this school every week and just pours into them. He's actually hoping to turn that into a full mentoring program next year, so that could be an opportunity for people to get involved. We also have many teachers and parents in our church, and we just want to thank you for the work that you do investing in children's lives. And I understand that, you know, we're not all called to the children's or the youth ministry. We're not all called to do that, and we don't all have the flexibility in our schedules to, you know, help out with after-school programs, and I totally understand that. And I don't want anyone to feel guilty about that. But what I do know is that as the church, as the body of Christ, we are called to live as a family. We're called to live as a family and to treat one another as we are flesh and blood. So I believe that it's all of our responsibility to treat the kids that are in our church and in our community as if they were our own kids, to treat them as if they were our own nieces and nephews, and to love them the same way we would love our own flesh and blood. So if you do this, if you invest in the next generation, if you get to know kids on their level, if you just get involved serving here at the church, if you get involved with the children's or the youth ministry, or any number of things that people in our church are doing in the community, and the endless other opportunities that there are, if you get involved, investing in the next generation, then you will be a part of changing the future. So, in seventh grade, when Kevin was in seventh grade, a guy named Lucas, he was a college-age intern that worked at a church that was only a few blocks away from Kevin's house. I think they actually may have first met just playing basketball on the basketball hoops that were in the parking lot of the church. Lucas started to invest in Kevin. He started to get to know him for who he was, started to build a relationship with him, started to love him, and teach him about the Lord, teach him the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. And Kevin's life completely changed. Completely changed. Kevin fell in love with the Lord, fell in love with him, and to this day, he pours into kids. That's what he does with his life. He invests in the middle schoolers and the high schoolers. He's the one investing in the next generation. So not only did Lucas change Kevin's life forever, he affected all the kids that Kevin's life was going to affect forever. Lucas isn't even, he's long gone. He hasn't been in that church for years. Kevin's still there serving and loving and just helping kids through the situations that they go through, helping them through their circumstances and the environments that they're in. And no longer does the environment that Kevin came from, no longer will that determine his future. And that's what we can be a part of. That's what we can be a part of by investing in children's lives. We can take their circumstances and we can say, this doesn't matter anymore. This is not going to determine whether you end up in jail. This isn't going to determine whether you just burn through relationship after relationship. No, we can invest in them when they're young. We can give them an eternity with Jesus. We can give them a new life. So if you think about what Kevin could have, how he could have ended up, you know, he should have ended up in jail, really. Dead, who knows? But he didn't. Now he's investing in kids and just amazing. So if you change a kid's life, you change your future. Thanks, guys.
Matt is actually still really good friends with Kevin, and Kevin keeps like talking about coming out to New York City at some point. So who knows, you might actually get to meet this guy. He might be serving kids here in New York City at some point. But man, thanks, seriously. Just to wrap that up, I just wanna say, I hope you guys will take that seriously. We really do need more people to get involved in the children's ministry here. We're still in this foundation laying phase of the church where we're kind of getting all the structures in place where we can kind of really throw the doors wide open and start asking, inviting people, letting them know it's here, you can take advantage of this. But there's still holes in the foundation. You know, we still need people to get involved in different teams, and we do need some people to step forward and say, I will intentionally spend time with our children. We need some more people on that children's ministry team. So please don't let that fall to the floor if you're like, I could do that. I could take one of these services once a month. I could go do that. Please follow up with us. Regardless, I want to ask everybody to do this. That's sort of like some of us. If you're gifted, called, passionate to work with children, do that. But here's what I want everybody to do. Our home groups, we meet every other week in home groups. Those are kind of like our big family meals. That's where the spiritual family part of the Bible actually comes true. In a public service like this, you can't really be a family as much as you can in someone's home with 20 people that you get to know really well. And those home groups are designed to be multi-generational, from babies on up to far from babies. And they're not all quite there yet, but we're pushing them all in that direction. And some of them really are. I mean, some of them are the full generational spectrum. And that's just so important. I stay in touch. We can all stay in touch by having conversations with nine-year-olds and seeing the world again for the first time through their eyes. After hearing what Matt said, I don't think I need to convince you that it's important for nine-year-olds to be having conversations with us. And so here's what I want to say. I want to ask every single person here, fully engage in your home group next week. If you've never tried one, go try one. It's not just about us and what we get about it. It's about what you can pour into the family. And take the children in your home group very seriously. Ask them about their day. Just ask them how they were doing in school. Get to know them. It's really simple. It's not rocket science, but really focus on the children. And I know you know kids. I know that you are somebody's favorite auntie or uncle or godmother, or you've got a friend who you're their favorite godmother, or is that there's that kid always throwing a ball against the wall in the courtyard of your building with no one to talk to, or what. I know that you know kids, and kids, they eat, and we have food at the home group, so involve them. I mean, there's kids, you guys see these kids, they're just idle, especially with summer coming. So take that step, invite the kids in your life, the teenagers in your life, let them know about it, let them be involved. And all of us, please, that's what I want to ask everybody to do. While I'm on that topic, I want to put the slide up for the next series, because we're starting our next series of messages next week in our home groups. It's called All In. And this is it's a series about those sort of moments in life when you have a decision to make, when everything becomes clear, and you either bet or go home. And it's moments like, it might be about our relationships, it might be about our dreams, our careers, it might be about our stuff, it might be about what we believe about God. But for the next several weeks, we're going to be looking at these really powerful stories in the Bible in our home groups about these all-in moments when someone they were either with him or they weren't. And these moments don't happen that often in life, but they do happen for every single person who lives several times. And so we're going to look at how people in the Bible handled it. You're going to hear stories from everyday people about how they handled moments like this. And 2 weeks from now, our next worship service, you're going to hear a brief, personal, compelling story from each of the staff members of Everyday Church about a moment in our own lives recently, like in the last few years, when God asked us to push all in and trust him, take a stand, take a step, believe that he'd protect us, take the plunge. Because we don't want to ask you to do anything that we're not willing to do ourselves. So that's going to be a really interesting service 2 weeks from now. This coming Sunday in home groups, the story is called Don't Get Baptized, because it's about a time when Jesus wanted to get baptized and John the Baptist tried to talk him out of it. It's going to be a really interesting story, but it was kind of an all-in moment for Jesus, so I hope that you'll come for that. Last thing I want to say, just to put a punctuation mark on Matt's message, is you guys are doing this with the kids, and I want to thank you for doing it, and I'll just tell one example. I could tell a bunch. But A young guy that I've been spending some time with, Cameron, who's part of our church, he is not in my home group, he's in the Bennett's home group. And Philip, actually, who's here, noticed that he was paying attention to this graphic novel version of the Bible that Wendy had. And so Philip went out and bought him a copy of this. Super simple gesture, right? Gave him a copy of this. This kid is so excited about this Bible. I haven't had a chance to tell Philip about this. I was walking down the street the other day with him, and Wendy had told me about that, and I was like, so what have you read about? What have you learned about? And he rattled off like 8 stories. He was like, oh, I read about Adam and Eve, and I read about King David, and he was telling me all the stuff that King David did, and I read about Samson, and I read about and Jesus and the disciples, and he was just going on and on and on about all these stories that I read. And I was like, man, Philip, way to go, man. I mean, that's really And so if I could just put that out as a vision for you, like, we're not asking you to do the impossible, we're just asking you to do little things like that, but these little things make a really huge difference. You can change the future. If you just change a kid's life, you will change the future.